Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus, and I guess this is more or less our New Year's show. And with me today is Campster.
Hello.
And Joshua.
Yay, I'm not last.
Mumbles.
Hello.
And Rutskarn.
And he's got a new trick.
Wait, who's Rutskarn? Who is this person?
It has been a while.
No, it's been far too long. I'm actually really glad to be back.
Yay, well, we're glad to have you back. Just in time for the end of the year.
Everybody, I want everybody to make a note of the timestamp where they notice, like, a timestamp of Seamus saying that they're glad to have me back. See how long that lasts into this week.
Shut up, you're boring me already.
It's 7:31 right now.
Oh my god, can we get this child off this podcast?
Yeah, so what are we going to talk about this week? Let's talk about the Steampocalypse, which is the overblown name given to the very slight security hiccup that Steam had that was nevertheless pretty damn scary.
Very slight?
It was dramatic. I don't know if it was serious.
It wasn't as dangerous as it seemed at first. Everybody said, your details are being exposed. Here's what happened. There's a great video that explains it from Tom Scott. I will link that in the show notes. But the short version is, Valve has a shitload of servers, and one of them was configured improperly. So when you go to a website, like a big website, not like SeamusYoung.com, I'm not big enough to have like a whole group of servers carrying my domain. I'm just, you know, one little computer. But if you go to a major website,
a big website like ChocolateHammer.org,
there's not one central server, but many, and you kind of get like, oh, okay, all the other ones are busy. You go to this computer and it'll talk to you. Well, one of them was configured improperly and it was caching things wrong so that when you go to the front page and you see your version of the front page that says, welcome back, Rutskarn, and here's a link to your wish list, and here's a link to all the games that are recommended based on your preferences. So it saves a copy of the front page. It's not supposed to save that for logged in people, but it did because it was configured improperly.
Hatoofle boyfriend, Demons Edition.
So then the next person connects, and it's me. And it's like, oh wait, I already have a version of the front page. And it takes the one that made especially for Rutskarn and shows it to me. And so then it's like, I see in the corner, welcome back, Rutskarn. Oh, well, that's not me. And these aren't recommendations for me. But if I click on anything there, I'm not going to go to Rutskarn's account. I'm just going to go to another random user's page. And you could, if you rolled the dice just right, and connected it just to the right server at the right time, you would see one other person's random home address, and I think the last four digits of their credit card number. Okay, that's a serious breach, but that's not like hackers got in and stole everybody's personal information.
Or at least at this point, we're pretty sure there were no hackers involved, and had a remarkable timing for it happening on the 25th of December, that magical day where, you know, among other things, Christmas happens.
Well, and I think that's what happened is they're like, everybody's logging in to turn in their Steam cards and get their Christmas presents that they got through Steam. And, you know, there's a Christmas rush. Everybody's firing up their new computers, playing all their games. So there's a huge load.
Someone pushes the wrong button.
They need to bring a bunch of their auxiliary servers online, and one of them's not configured properly. And it gives us this, which is just for a couple of hours. Some people, it never happened to me. I reloaded the page many, many times. I never saw an improper version of the page. I never saw anything wrong. But while it was going on and nobody understood.
But it is quite possible, since you were using it, that other people saw your version of the page.
That is true.
Yeah, I heard about this like from someone else before I noticed it myself, so I just ended up staying off of Steam for the day. Not that it, like, if this truly was just a caching issue, like, it wouldn't have made any significant difference unless you are actually using the store to buy stuff.
According to Tom Scott, you actually wouldn't be able to buy things with this problem going on. The layers of the security, you're...
Right, but I mean, like, the risk of your personal information getting out would be...
Right.
...completely dependent upon what pages you were actually generating yourself.
So, like, once a minute, there's a roll of the dice, however long it refreshes its cache, let's say it's once a minute, then at the top of every minute, some new person that goes to the page will get their version, made the official version that everybody sees. So it's like, you know, once a minute, somebody gets exposed to everybody else. One person.
So if you're not using, like, say, the buying portions of the site, the only personal information that you risk getting out is someone seeing that they're logged in as you instead of
right.
their normal account.
And they can't even, they wouldn't even be able to do anything because it wasn't confused about who was logged in. So you wouldn't even be able to change somebody else's wish list or change any of their information. All you could do was see it.
Did this happen to anyone else? I actually had it happen. I went back to my computer in the middle of the day and suddenly everything was in Spanish.
I wanted to see that. I heard that they were seeing the site in Russian and I'm like, oh, that sounds hilarious. And I sat there and hit refresh. And at best, the site would just refuse to load. It was like, oh, too busy, go away. You know, acting like it's just overloaded. I never saw the site in some funny language or logged in as somebody else or anything like that. It was just broken.
You know, the amusing thing is that I actually did once log in and find the entire site in German, except that site was Games for Windows Live website, and as far as I know, there was nothing wrong with the website that day.
I had that happen where I went Games for Windows Live and it was all in French one time for no reason.
Wow. So like the Steam Apocalypse, the event that deemed fit to be called the Steam Apocalypse was a normal day for Windows.
Yes. I actually made that joke on Twitter. I actually did the Silent Hill 2 reference where Games for Windows Live was like, for me, it's always like this. And it turns out that's actually the case.
Wait, does Games for Windows Live still exist, though?
A few games still depend on it, and the servers, I think, just sort of like, yeah, whatever, wave you through. Like, they're there just to respond.
But yeah, I noticed that it was in Spanish, but I didn't realize anything was wrong. I just assumed I had clicked the little language tab up at the upper right of the store, and didn't realize anything was wrong until I went to go save the changes, and it was like, Steam can't save these changes, except it was in Spanish, and I actually had to translate it to find out what the error message said. But it wouldn't let me save the changes because obviously I didn't have actual access to this guy's profile or gal's. I don't know whose profile it was. So I went and had to Google what was going on. And as soon as I went to Google, every response was basically, Steam is melting down and the world is ending. Please don't ever use Steam for the next time, however long it is. And I just logged out and went and played console games.
I thought it was kind of funny after the fact. It was an amusing thing. I was relieved that it wasn't a serious breach. I mean, it's annoying and a little scary if you're sensitive about your details. I'm not as sensitive about it because I moved a year ago and I haven't updated my address yet. So if anybody got into my account, they got an old address and a credit card.
Oh no, all your haters are going to go and murder all the people that live at your old house and...
Oh, my haters.
But that's not a big deal.
I'm not popular enough to have creepy stalkers yet. I'm still aiming high. Someday I'm going to have some psycho that wants to kill me and, like, eat my face or something. But that day hasn't come yet. Just keep reaching for the stars.
I don't want a psycho killer. I just want a nemesis. I want someone to go to war with. That's what I want. I want an equal. I don't want, like, a creepy
Campster,
stalker.
You're not cool enough to have a nemesis. No offense. Aww. Actually, serious offense.
All right. In the past couple of weeks, we've all done our end of year thing, except for two of us.
Me and Campster. Let's do it, Campster. Let's talk about old
no,
games.
No, no, no. You guys are not allowed to talk about that. But Mumbles and Rutzgarn have not weighed in on what they think of 2015. So what did you think?
I made a list, and my list is best games of 2015. And number one is, fuck me, it's Undertale. I hate that I love Undertale as much as I do because of all of the shit that it's happened on the internet about Undertale. And I feel like trash liking Undertale, but...
I haven't heard any of that. All I heard is everybody loved it. I mean, it made it really high on a lot of diverse lists, big sites, little sites, other developers, lots of people gave it the top
You didn't
slot.
Hear about the silly little, like, best game ever controversy that happened like a week ago.
There's been backlash because people like it a lot.
So basically what happened was, I forget what website it was. What website was doing it, Gamester?
GameFAQs is doing their annual character.
Oh, that was so good.
And so they did best game of all time. And people kept voting for Undertale, and it would beat out, like, you know, Mario games and Zeldas and, like, you know, what have you, the nerds' favorite games evers. And so people got really upset. And so then, like, for a couple weeks, you're just like, you like Undertale? Oh, you're trash. You're just hipster. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, no, I like Undertale. And I also think it's funny to troll nerds. This is my aesthetic. So, like...
I think you need a lot... I think you need a huge lack of perspective to get angry because a poll on GameFAQ didn't turn out the way you'd wanted it to.
I know. I was so surprised, but people were really getting angry about it. I was like, what? How? Oh, why internet. Do you care?
Oh, internet.
Oh, internet.
Do you guys
Game
remember
of the
when there
year,
was a,
the
that
internet.
Huge shitstorm because The Escapist was voting on its like favorite
yes.
game of the year?
Yes.
And they claimed that there was... So it was... What was it? It was Papers, Please versus BioShock Infinite. And a bunch of people were coming over because of this Russian YouTuber said that Papers, Please was really good. So a bunch of, you know, it was up for it. So a bunch of people from that guy's fan base were coming over and voting it up. And it was great because we have fans of BioShock Infinite who are arguing
what?
For only keeping things to natives
Game
and locals
has fans.
And not allowing others
oh my God.
To come in on the discussion. And then we have fans of Papers, Please arguing for an unregulated border.
Escapist
are the
is
escapist
a garbage
forums
dump.
Still like the greatest forums on the internet?
I like that all of these questions are implicitly aimed at Rutskarn because of his experience.
He's the only one that reads them.
I actually cured my habit some point during the last year.
Oh my
I have
God.
Not been in these games.
No! Rutskarn! No!
There are many steps I have taken towards making my life better. There are several steps I've taken towards making it worse. But
I want to make an intervention to make you go back and revert back to your evil ways of reading escapist comments.
I actually, like, I have a voice in my head.
I mean, I haven't read them since I stopped working there. I don't think Seamus actually pays any attention to the escapist outside of his own blog articles.
For clarity, I read my own the threads on my articles.
It's got to the point where I actually have like an escapist commenter somewhere in my head that occasionally speaks unprompted on some subject. It's like
oh
a little,
my God.
Like, you know how like in the city there's like these little plants like bursting up from the sidewalk? It's like I just have a little blossom of shit. Just like a little shit
that
blossom
is,
poking up from the cityscape of my mind. Oh, it's awful. It is the worst. It's actually legitimately bad. It's not like just The Escapist, but it's The Escapist
beautiful.
Is definitely
its
action.
Beautiful. Okay, my other favorites, I'll just run through them real fast. Dropsy, which is a game, it's a point-and-click adventure about a clown that is kind of creepy, but he just wants to make everyone happy, so you like... try and figure out what a person's problem is, and then fix it, and then you give them a hug, and then you go on with your day. And
that was if I remember, the Undertale kind of game before Undertale came out.
Yeah.
Where it was like, oh, this game's really good, you guys should play it, and everybody looked at it that hadn't played it was like, this doesn't look any good, why does everybody like this?
It,
then Undertale
it took me a long time to play
destroyed
it.
Destroyed all the discussion.
Yeah. It took me a long time to play it because the art style is so weird and kind of grotesque almost. And so it took me a while to be like, this game will be nice, but it's a really nice game. Like if you're in a shitty mood or whatever, and you need something to make you feel better, that game totally does it. It's really great.
See, I couldn't get into it because I love the way it looks, but I can't do point-and-click adventures. I tried so hard, but...
Pillars of Eternity came out this year, but like a long time ago. I could have sworn it was a 2014 game, but it was this year, and I love it. I liked Arkham Knight. I thought Arkham Knight was a game of the year for me. I mean, if you're a Batman fan, you have to like it, I feel like. Even though the tank stuff was kind of lame, I liked some of the tank stuff, but most of it was kind of shitty. The way that they worked in Joker, the way that they tried to tell the Killing Joke story, and they missed just a little bit. They were a little off the mark, but they did their fucking best. They incorporated Dick Grayson. So a lot of the villains, the Riddler stuff was great. It was so colorful. It reminded me of why I like Batman Forever. I like Batman Forever because it's so colorful and zany. And they kind of go full throttle with, like, just taking a really drab black city and giving it lots of, like, weird colors. And this game totally nails that. So yeah, I think that was one of my favorite games of the year. The DLC for the Batgirl was shit though, so don't play that.
Oh, I wish I'd heard that before I got it. I was like, yeah, I want to play as Batgirl, and it's a team up, so that sounds perfect. And it was like, you know, the shitty tune in gameplay mechanic where you gotta like move the thumbsticks around. It was like,
yeah,
those were really, really friggin' hard, and there were a lot of them, and they were timed, and if you failed, you instantly died and had to watch a bunch of cutscenes and then redo a fight and then get another crack at it. And I wanted to smash my controller. Oh, it was such bullshit. And it wasn't, I liked the fight at the end. I like that.
I couldn't even get that far. I was just sort of like, this isn't really storytelling. It's just go beat up this mook. Go beat up this mook.
Yep.
Go beat up this guy now. And I'm like, this isn't really why I play Batman games. Because
the final fight is actually kind of groovy. It's Batgirl and Robin versus Harley and Joker in a giant brawl. And you have to use the team. Like sometimes, like, Joker's really freaking dangerous. If you get near him, he'll grab you, and you have to call to your partner to come and help, and they'll just come and like jump in from out of the frame and bail you out. So it, cool. It kind of, yeah, I really like it, but it was just getting there was such a chore. Oh, it was so awful.
I would have liked more storytelling or made it more of a detective, because I mean, with Barbara Gordon, she's so smart, she would have been a great chance to just do mostly detective stuff, but it was like, look, she can kick butt too. And it's like, yeah, but like, that's not fun for me. I don't give a shit about killing mooks. I like the Harley DLC a lot, which is weird because it was so short, but like, I really liked the mechanics of that one. Yeah. I just didn't really like the mechanics of this one. And then her story I liked, even though there's the whole controversy of whether or not it's a game. I don't give a shit. I thought it was good.
At this
and
point,
it's like,
who cares?
Yeah, who gives a shit? It's on Steam. Who gives a shit? And I liked Fallout 4, I guess. But it's at the bottom of my list. Even though I put, like, 70 hours in it, it just feels like I have, like, this itch that I need to scratch. And it's almost like getting Skyrim DLC, honestly. Like, Fallout 4 was a little bit like just getting Skyrim DLC and just doing that thing that I like to do.
It's like Skyrim with guns.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying that. But it is kind of Skyrim with guns. And building stuff. Because settlers apparently can't fucking build their own shit, and they need to be get their asses wiped for them all the time, constantly, until the end of time, and no one else is going to help you with it, apparently.
You are the general, and also the only person capable of doing anything in the army.
It really feels like corralling and taking care of babies. That's really what it feels like. All right, I guess you guys can't take care of your fucking selves, and I have to take care of the entire wasteland. Maybe I should have bombed it. Oh well, it doesn't matter now.
No, definitely the best way to play it is to just say, fuck the rest of your settlements, dismantle all their shit so that you have tons of resources to build up your one settlement and make it look really cool.
Yeah.
And then install mods to get rid of that bullshit, like, settlement building limit that seems to exist only for consoles.
That's it. That's all I got.
Okay, Rutskarn.
Oh, Jesus. Okay, so here's the deal. I spent about 50% of 2015 trying to crank out projects, and the other half of it being anxious out of my mind, which is getting better at this point, but it actually led to very little video gaming happening. I feel like about a dozen things came out this year that I probably would really enjoy if I sat down with them. And for various reasons I haven't. So I'm going to read off the partial list, and my picks might not have made it to the top in another year. And in fact, they might not have made it to the top this year, but they get a pass. Because, for example, Pillars of Eternity, I have a feeling that that is an excellent game that I will very much enjoy when I sit down and I buy it and I play it and I get through it. Currently, I am in a situation where the idea of stopping and taking a deep breath and focusing and getting through, like, this kind of role-playing game that I enjoy is a little bit like, you know, that might not happen in the immediate future. But I'm just going to read off what I have played, and it's actually going to be a complete list, which will also be my Game of the Year list.
All right.
So this year I played Hotline Miami 2, and that's probably one of my big picks. Because...
Really? You know, I heard bad things about it. I heard it was just, it felt unfair and frustrating and overly long and convoluted.
So long as the discussion continues about Hotline Miami 2, that will be the tone of the discussion. And they're not wrong. That, yeah, I mean, Chris did the whole thing on how he doesn't like that game, and I can't really disagree with him on any given point. You know, it's needlessly, it loses its mystery needlessly. It tries to explain too much, and it does it in a way that isn't even accessible. It's just like a hidden mystery story. The gameplay is just worse than Hotline Miami in every way that doesn't involve the introduction of a gimmick. Pretty much the only thing that's objectively better is the soundtrack. And I mean, not objectively better, subjectively better is the soundtrack, which I prefer. And I think the only thing I could say about it is that a Hotline Miami that is 30% as interesting as the first Hotline Miami is still one of the most interesting things that came out this year. And, you know, it's still rad, even when it's not being delivered well. The core concept is cool enough, the presentation is slick enough, that even in a sort of diminished form, it's still much more interesting to me than, I don't know, what else came out this year. You know, it's more interesting than just Ubisoft open world game, one of the four Assassin's Creed that came out this season.
You didn't miss Tony Hawk, did you? I hope you got Tony Hawk. Please tell me you at least played that.
You know, I took some NyQuil a couple days ago and had a bunch of feverish dreams about being chased by, like, freak things that all have the same face and I'm just phasing through walls. I feel like that's basically the Tony Hawk experience.
Yeah, so you basically have played it.
You guys joke, but I've had to talk Nick out of buying that game more times than you'd imagine. Like, sometimes we just go to the store and he's like, so, that new Tony... I'm like, dude, you know it's bad. No one on the internet has ever said it's good. It's unfinished shit. And he's like, yeah, but skateboarding game.
why don't you just let him do it and like just be
because it's a waste of money. It's a waste of money.
If you've got this part of a weird niche, you know, if you're a fan of a weird niche kind of game, then that's what you do. You buy them even though they're shitty because you don't get that many. Yeah, I can understand where he's coming from.
I feel like he could really break you down over the course of a few months. Like if just like every couple weeks. He just, like, says casually, like, as if it's for the first time, like, I heard there's a new Tony Hawk game out. What do you think?
Oh, my God. Look, he's already broken me down about Skylanders. Like, I have bought so many Skylanders for this motherfucker. I even bought... So, okay, the new Skylanders game came out, and you can only get certain Skylanders with each, like, console. So, like, the PS4 Skylanders are different from the Nintendo Skylanders that are different from the Wii Skylanders, and the Wii ones are different from the Wii U ones. So, anyway, Skylanders released on the Wii, and it's the shittiest version of Skylanders, but it comes with a Dark Bowser. What is a Dark Bowser, you ask? A Bowser that's black and wears cool armor and is totally fucking badass, and it is the coolest Skylander out of all of them.
I think you're critically mistaken in thinking that I would ask when you present, like, a Nintendo character and an adjective. Just like, oh, did you hear that the new game has Spiny Mario? And I'm like, whatever. I don't even...
Anyway,
what do you mean, Spiny Mario. What is
anyway,
that
butt scar?
Oh man, I want the sour Luigi character for my Super Mario Brothers level maker.
Okay. I get it. You're a fucking asshole. All right. So the Wii version is just the Wii version is just terrible. But it has the Dark Bowser, and it's the only way to get Dark Bowser. And it's $90. No, it's like $100 to get the full set. Yeah, and so I'm like, shit, there's no way that I'm spending $100 just so I can get this one fucking Skylander. It comes with some other Skylanders, to be clear, that you can only get with this, but the Bowser one's a cool one. So anyway, I was like, shit, but this is the coolest one, and it's always the one that Nick stops and looks at and goes, I'm so sad that I can't get this one. Just sigh, and then sad walk out of the store, and I'm like, shit. So then I found it on sale for $60, and I was like, I gotta do it. I gotta get it. And, like, it's so ridiculous. I spent so much money on fucking Skylanders of all games. So
did you give it to him, and he was just like, oh, that thing. That's
no,
cool.
No. This is what happened. So I saved it for last because it's such a like, weird gift, because it's the last thing that he'd expect getting is a fucking Dark Bowser, because we've always been like, it's not worth it, it's stupid, who gives a shit, and then, like, you get this little glimmer in his eye, but anyway, so I saved it for last, and he opens it, and he's like, oh, you did it, and I was like, that's not the best part of the story, the best part is, I got it on sale, and we're like, oh, we're just, like, celebrated that we got it on sale. That's what being an adult is all about, kiddos, is getting great gifts on sale.
Not necessarily what it's actually worth. I mean, you still overpaid by about an order of magnitude, but
yes,
you know, you still saved half of it.
Yes.
So anyway, games of the year.
Oh, right.
Sorry. So Rutskarn played Hotline, yeah, okay. Suckammy, and Tony Hawk.
Yes, Hotline. Okay, the Beginner's Guide. I did settle down and play the Beginner's Guide. I think that that's a really interesting game because it presents a pretty clinically accurate portrayal of somebody who's just not really doesn't really have his life together, and it kind of does it in a sneaky way. Like, I actually had somebody who's, you know, getting a doctorate in psychology play the game, and, like, they saw it way before I did, like, sort of what they're doing here and, like, how they're portraying it. But
interesting.
Even so, when you get to the end, you're able to put all the pieces together retroactively and kind of understand that you learned more about this person, like this narrator, than probably they would have really wanted you to have. And, you know, you mentioned, right, Seamus, and I absolutely agree. The first thing that happens whenever you finish the game is that you want to talk about it, and if necessary, you want to actually physically sit someone down in the chair so they can play it so you can talk to them about it. And I think we need more games like that.
I'm down. Yeah.
So there's that. What else did I physically play? Oh, Fallout 4. God damn it. I guess that makes it to the list. Okay, so you know how we had our big Fallout 4 hoedown and how I was waving the banner and I'm like, you know what? It's pretty damn good. I like it. I'm able to roleplay my character. Did I manage to talk about that again on the diecast?
I don't remember you talking about it.
Roleplay your character. Or was that Capture? I can't remember.
No, that was Chris.
No, that was
me.
So
yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
It was actually a huge mistake to get my character to a point where I felt like my motivations were driving my actions, because then you hit the stupid part, and then you really feel dumb for doing that, and I basically, like, at that point, I tapered off playing the game. And, do I want to do the spoiler discussion of that?
I'm okay with it. Are we okay with spoiling? I mean, okay, you know what? I'm gonna say, go ahead, this is Fallout 4. If you're playing for the story, you're making a horrible mistake in your life. You should not be playing that game for the story.
I still haven't finished it. I just said, fuck it, I'm gonna go do side quests and become a superhero. Yeah.
So, this is about finding your son. That's your big goal, right? To find your son. So, here's me, right? I'm finally get to the point where I'm gonna find him. After all this time and all these, like, fucking red herrings, I've turned into a lawyer and housewife from that into to, like, a cold-blooded murderer driven by this dark, violent purpose. I have shot my way through a dark and unfamiliar world and adopted a persona that no one of my previous friends and family would recognize, all for the purposes of finding my child. And I come across my child in a lab, and I try to talk to him, and he doesn't recognize me. He doesn't think I'm his mother, and he's, you know, crying, and he's yelling for help, and it's heartbreaking. And, like, I'm actually, like, getting a little bit moved despite the game's shitty presentation, because I'm deep enough in this character. And suddenly, a guy walks in and shuts my son off. Like, he says a word and my son, like, physically shuts off, and I'm like, what the fuck did they do to him? And the first thing I do is I actually shoot the guy I meet in the head. The guy walks in through the door. Because I'm like, you know, this guy, I'm angry. He turned off my son and now he wants to talk to me. What the fuck? And then I load the game immediately after that because I'm like, you know what? You know, that's my emotional reaction, but I should probably control that urge and like talk
that
my way
through. That actually makes
this
for an interesting story. Like, that would be a good sci-fi
short story.
It
does. It makes for a much more interesting story when that they wrote, and it conveniently
so
wallpapers
you're wishing
over the
you
fucking
had stuck
plot
with
hole.
That.
So here's the plot twist. The old guy walks into the room is your son. And that's not the part that made me angry, because that's like, okay, that's interesting, kind of. And then in a very slow, boring, monotone, emotionally bankrupt conversation with this guy, he gives just enough exposition to show how stupid and contrived this whole thing was. It's like, so let me get this straight. You made a robot version of yourself as a child. Then you made it so that would be the first thing I would see, and that you would shut it off when I entered the room for no reason, but to torment your mother, apparently. And also, like, I feel like the game really does a poor job of addressing why your son didn't get you back. Oh, because he didn't think about it until now, until you're freed from your carbonite poisoning.
Every question that begins with why in that game is unanswerable. Yes. There is no reason for
it's
anything
like,
anybody does.
Why did you, my son, feel that the best way to reunite yourself with me was to let me think that you're gone forever or whatever? To let me wake up cold alone opposite the corpse of my husband in a dark pit full of roaches so that I could climb out into a blasted and unfamiliar world full of terrible peril and dangers to hunt down the most hardcore, unkillable badass you personally know of and get into a fight with them and then scan their memories to find a fake robot version of you so that I could follow that and break into your house by tracking down a man through a radiation storm only to arrive and find you and say, oh good, I've got some chores I need you to do.
Oh my god.
And I was, so at this point, I'm like, I really want to ask this kid what the fuck is wrong with him, and I can't. And this is where
it breaks down.
This is where I can't play this character anymore. So then I just
left.
And then I did some other side quests, and then I quit.
But here's what makes this game better than Fallout 3. Is Fallout 3, he would just be the good guy. And he would be like, and now you've got to go kill the bad guy. And in this game, you have the freedom to decide, actually, I think you're evil, and I'm going to kill you and everybody you know and everybody you've ever met. And in fact, I'm going to genocide your entire faction. That freedom to pick your side instead of having the karma meter pointing to the good guys is what made the game playable and endurable for me.
That, that was something else that impressed me. I'm not sure how many factions you can actually genocide, but the Underground Railroad people are super
dumb
towards you initially. They're basically assholes towards you until you prove that you're not gonna, for some reason, turn the synths back to the Institute or something, or just inform on them. It makes sense that they don't really all that interested in being nice to anyone that they don't know, but I was annoyed by that, so I was like, fuck it. I'm just gonna kill everybody. I'm gonna save here and kill as many of these people as I can, and I'm sure they'll all stand back up and get back to their work, because I can't fucking kill everybody in this game. And then I killed the entire fucking Underground Railroad, and none of them were immortal.
What? That's evil. That is evil.
I mean, I didn't stick that. I did the
the
Undertale would frown on you sort of reloaded the game after that, but
reloaded
I wanted to see if it was possible.
And it is. That's nice.
Well, the Brotherhood is all, you can kill the entire Brotherhood too, because it in later plot you can just, you have to take down another faction, so it makes sense to me anyway, but
the only ones you can't just wipe out are the Minutemen then.
Yeah, because there's never a quest to go take down the Minutemen, I don't think. I think there's just a quest to take down the Railroad or the Brotherhood. I don't think it's ever the Minutemen.
Anyway, what I was going to say was, my problem with that whole reveal that Rutskarn was talking about actually goes the sort of the opposite way. Rutskarn's problem with it seems to be a little bit backwards looking, like, you know, this was my character motivation.
You're all backwards.
No, I mean, like, he was looking more at, like, I'm looking at, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'm looking at it structurally. Like, my problem with it is, that is your character's guiding light throughout the entire first 2/3 of the game is, you know, gotta find my son, gotta find my son, gotta find my son. And as soon as that sort of curtain is pulled back and the truth is revealed, suddenly now it's not at all about your relationship with your son, and now it's like, who do you want to be besties with? Who is your favorite faction? And that is now the game.
Yeah.
It's like, pick your stupid club that you want to be a member of, and that
I
really
hate all of
me.
Them. I hate
every
club.
Oh, they're all
club.
Idiots. Yes. They are all idiots in different ways.
It's like, I feel like the Brotherhood of Steel are really effective, but I don't... Okay, so part of the character backstory and, like, personality I picked out, I don't want to, like, join in with the man. Like, I just don't want to be, like, the part of the, like, robo-fascists who are just conquering everything and moving in with their choppers. That seems like a bad idea. Like, I don't actually know shit about these people. I don't want to just... put some super powerful group in power, and then the Minutemen are a joke. It's not even a faction. It's not a faction. That is incorrect to call out a faction. It's some douchebag who wants you to be a faction. He's
you
like what,
you personally,
hey,
but they're the only ones with a good goal. They have a good goal. It's just that they don't.
Yeah,
they're not actually
the NCR
a group.
In the East, basically.
Yeah,
they
yeah,
just,
yeah.
The Gunners won, and they don't exist anymore. They're the Jedi. Yeah,
I just completely don't buy the premise that, like, Preston has anything to offer me. In fact, he's giving me negative cachet because he's having me head up a fictitious organization at this point that used to be a real organization that was famously evil, that, like, did a heel turn. It's basically like, what if you were part of a club, and that club did a bunch of stuff, and then they turned out to be huge dickbags, and then they're like, hey, want to start this club? And I'm like, no, I don't want to be president of the asshole club. I can just go help people. I don't need your bullshit club name to go help people, Garvey.
You need to rebrand, guys. Maybe make a new logo, get some new uniforms.
Okay, the Hour Dudes are now following me. As my first act as leader of the Hour Dudes, I am going to go shoot a bunch of raiders. What a coincidence! That's what I had on my schedule anyway.
Can we talk about, like, I was just thinking about the way that they change your dynamic between your son and how the fact that he turns older and he calls himself father. The game still makes you say shit, well, sometimes... It gives you the option of saying stuff like, Sean, you're still my son and I love you. But it never addresses the fact that it's playing around this Freudian shit where it's like, your son is now your father. And everything he says to you is like some asshole dad who's like, I know what's best. Don't worry, that place is full of shit. I want you to go out and make it good. Now just listen to me and be a good little girl. They never fucking address the fact that the roles are reversed. That they are literally reversed. They never give the character the option to say, you can't treat me like you're my dad, and just because you call yourself father and walk around this fucking place, it never gives you the chance to verbally assault this motherfucker. Because
there's no emotional connection with him at all.
Yeah. And the funny thing is like, for me, when I was, because I already knew the spoiler and I thought it was just hilarious, so I walk in and I'm like, all right, well, here's robot and here's dad coming through, or I mean my son, whatever. And so, but it was, to me, the surprising thing was, like, after a couple, like, quests, I was like, I'm gonna do what I want, Dad! I'm gonna go help the railroad, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm like, when did this change to be, like, some kind of, like, rebellious act against my son, who I should, like, have maternal instincts towards, but I don't at all. Like, none. And the game expects you to still kind of feel like, oh, this is my son, I have to take care of him, even though he's this old douchebag. And it never addresses that change in perspective, even though they've deliberately wrote it that way. And so they, by the end of it, like, I remember I did the whole railroad stuff because I'm a sap, and I was like, I want to free the robots, I want them to be free and live their own lives. And so at the very end, he, like, is dying, right? And the Institute is about to blow up. And I remember going, like, I don't know if you're actually going to die in this explosion, so I'm going to just kill you myself. And I just, like, stab him. Oh, no. I sledgehammered his head off, and I was like, that'll do. That'll do.
You couldn't couldn't kill him in his sleep just out of respect? No. You're like, shoot him in the head? No, you had to sledgehammer him.
I gotta be certain you're gonna die. Super sledge.
I even said it out loud. I was like, I don't know if you're really gonna die in this, so sorry, Pops. And then I just, like, sledgehammered his face off, and I was like, that felt really good. But it never, like, addresses that. Like, it never addresses, like, you're taking down this asshole.
Wow.
And I guess I was, I don't know, and I think that was the biggest problem with the game for me, because my perspective totally changed, and it's so gross to me that you spend part of the game going, where's my son? I love Sean, and I love my husband, but you as a player are like, I just want to go do drugs with Hancock and Good Neighbor, and then shoot some guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so weird, the disjointedness of it.
Yeah, that's been kind of my problem, since I still have not... I had the end of the game spoiled for me, so I knew what was gonna happen anyway. But I haven't ever gotten to the point where any of this stuff happens. I'm still like, oh, you gotta build your teleporter pad, and I'm like, okay, whatever.
So in conclusion, Town of Salem is my game of the year. Fuck.
Okay,
you're
then.
The ultimate hipster. All right.
It's the game I probably played the most hours of.
I know,
bigger hipster and say, what the hell is Town of Salem?
That doesn't make you a hipster.
Shut up.
So, next up, Star Wars. The Force gets waked up. We've
awakens?
All seen it, and we're going to spoil it. Like, at the end of this sentence, all spoilers are, if you don't want it spoiled, turn this podcast off now, because... The next thing I say is Han Solo gets killed by his own son. There. let's talk about
then,
this movie.
That was our Star Wars discussion. Goodbye, folks.
Let's talk about this movie.
I
loved it. I absolutely
really
loved it.
I think it was. I think it was great.
It was okay.
The one thing that's been bothering me is the argument over whether Rey is too much of a Mary Sue, or whether she's too strong or too powerful. But here's the thing about that debate. It's like, it's either framed, it's framed as this false dichotomy where it's like, either Rey is a stupid, pointless Mary Sue character, some shallow wish fulfillment Mary Sue character, or there's absolutely nothing wrong with the way that her Force powers are portrayed. And I think there's room to...
I was going to say, we have to stop doing arguments like that on the fucking internet. And I know that's not going to... That's never going to change. But this has been a problem with any kind of giant argument on the internet, is that you're like, oh shit, I have to pick a side. Okay, Force Awakens was 100% amazing, and you all suck, and it was the greatest game or movie ever, and you whatever. And it's like, no, there's definitely, like, flaws in the movie. And then the other side is people feeling pressure to be like, Rey is a Mary Sue and the whole movie sucks, and why wasn't a male the main character, and where's Luke Skywalker, and, you know, like, and so both sides feel, like, obligated to take these really extreme places. And on top of that, it's so, Star Wars is such, like, a personal thing for a lot of people. Like, Star Wars is this thing that gets ingrained in people, I feel like. I know, especially in the Bay Area, I know a lot of people who use it for charity stuff. I know people who watch Star Wars and it helped them get through shitty stuff in their childhood. Like, Star Wars is just this really personal fucking thing, and if you are like, it's stupid, and that new character you like, she's also stupid, it is personal, and you can't just be like, well, let's have a logical Phoenix Wright court debate about it. Like, it can't happen that way, because it's part of you, it's part of your soul, and I think people forget that, and that's what turns it really disgusting and gross and mean and... What that discussion turned into.
And even if you do find somebody that just wants to take up the contrary position and you two manage to have a civil argument, it's not like unless you take it to email, you're going to be having it on a forum where there's going to be some asshole agitating one or the other of you. And you'll have multiple assholes on both sides agitating you until you're too angry and frustrated and dragging you off topic.
Yeah.
And it'll be this huge time sink, and instead of it's somebody with an agenda instead of somebody trying to understand, I want to know why you think this is good when I hate it. They'll be like, no, I have to explain to you how you are stupid and wrong to like this. And it's so and it turns what could be a wonderful conversation into just this pit of misery.
Yeah, and that happened to me a lot on Twitter with a lot of different people.
That frustrated me so bad. I saw that happening, and I was like, oh, that's awful.
I know that the Mumbles persona is not that reasonable and is crazy and wacky and fun, but, like, me as a person, as Kelly, I like to think of myself as pretty reasonable, and I get a little impassioned about stuff, but I try and listen to people. I try so hard to listen to people. And throughout the entire week, it was just people being like, oh, let's have a logical discussion about how the Force works. This and that. I'm like, I don't find someone else who really wants to have that discussion. Like, I want to talk about themes and characters and world building.
Since when did the Force have rules?
Yeah, that's kind of the thing with the Force.
That's literally missing the point of the Force.
Well, okay, but I can understand the thing saying, you know, this feels a little unjust. I think rather than say that you broke the rules, I think a better thing is to say, this didn't work. Oh, Rey is doing this thing, and the movie didn't really set up how she learned to do it, or give her a character building moment where she would become able to do that. There wasn't a turning point. It wasn't built on anything. It was just suddenly the story needed her to do it. And so she does it, and that felt a little fast and loose with the character.
Which is fine.
I have no problem with it.
You can have that, you can believe that, and not be like, well, that means the entire character sucks. Fuck this movie. Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. In fact, I think the problem isn't her character at all. I think her character's wonderful. I think the problem is J.J. Abrams sort of lives in the moment. You can see this throughout this movie. You can see it in his other movies. Kirk gets on board the Enterprise as a cadet, and I think it's less than 20 minutes of screen time before he's in the captain's chair. At the beginning of Force Awakens, Poe and Finn get in the TIE fighter that they've never flown before, and they're like, just like, get in there and wing it, and they're fine, and they're able to beat all the bad guys and figure it out as they go without getting killed. You know, that Rey flies the Millennium Falcon without having any idea how it works, and it's half broken, and she makes it work anyway. It's just J.J. Abrams, he likes to stretch what the heroes can do. He likes his heroes to be very, very hero-y. And sometimes he goes a little far for me, and I'm like, oh, okay, whatever, J.J. Abrams. But I don't think that should reflect poorly on the characters. I think that's more a plot problem or a story problem.
I'm legitimately curious how much of that is actually Abrams' tendency to have emotions in the moment, which is totally a thing Abrams does, and how much of it is this abstract, unexplained concept of the Force Awakening. I mean, it's sort of the title of the film. And the idea seems to be that at least Rey and maybe also Finn seem to suddenly now be tapping into Force abilities they didn't know they had.
And I think that was, like, pretty explicit, not in dialogue, but in the way the scenes are shot, in the way the actors are acting, that's how they're developing their powers. And I really have no problem with the Rey having powers, and I really have no problem with the everybody's just sort of flying by the seat of their pants and still succeeding. I mean, the first movie had Luke hop in an X-Wing, which he's never flown before, fly against a gigantic battle station, use the Force and close his eyes to blow it up in one shot and save the day. Two weapon shot, whatever. But it's the exact same sort of thing that happens in this film several times. I don't have a problem with it at all. And I think there was enough of a setup there to show that Rey is sort of starting to figure out that she can feel and use the Force, and Kylo Ren is very explicit in dialogue about this, that, like, the longer she goes on uncaught, the more dangerous she's going to be. I think that was an explicit thing of her character, and Do we really want to see another exact arc of Star Wars where Rey spends three movies getting powerful enough to confront the big bad and have the final duel?
Well, and that's not even the purpose of this movie. I was trying to explain to someone that I think the purpose of this movie is not watch one person become a Jedi Master. I think it's a story about two different Padawans. One is Kylo Ren and one is Rey. And I think it's a story about one guy who thinks he's the fucking greatest, but he isn't a Sith Master. He isn't the best Sith out there. He's not even close, but he pretends that he is because he's the only, like, Force user at the time. And then as soon as other Force users shows up, he's like, ah, shit. And the other story is Rey is someone who has a troubled past, doesn't really know who she is, but is probably very, very, very strong in the Force, learning to be a Jedi Master. And you know, if you look at her character, I thought she tripped up a bunch of times, but the most interesting thing for her was when they're in the lightsaber battle and Kylo was like, I'll train you in the Force. And Rey has this moment where she's like, yeah, I want to know how to use my powers. This guy obviously knows how to use his powers. I want to be trained. And then they start playing music and it's this beautiful like Star Wars score that you know well. And then she's like, no, because you're fucking evil. And then you see the divide between these two people where Kylo Ren may not be evil, but he chose power. And Rey is a little confused about what she wants, but she's never going to choose power over friendship and love and all that shit.
And in case the divide between those two was hard for you to catch, J.J. Abrams decided to hit you over the head with it by making it physical.
Lava pit. There's a lava pit between...
Yeah. It just opens up out of nowhere. I mean, I know it was explained that the thing blew up, but it was just sort of like, wow, that's a little one. That's classic J.J. Abrams, though.
Okay, well, I thought that the arcs, the two arcs of the perpendicular arc of Rey versus Kylo Ren was great in the movie, because Kylo Ren starts out at his most badass. He shows up in his ship and he's, you know, the new Darth Vader, and he just fucking stops Blaster Bolt mid shot in the air and just kind of forgets about it. I mean, he's able to read minds and shit. And then as the movie goes on, you start to realize, like, you realize more and more how pathetic he actually is.
Yeah.
And he just, his arc is constantly on a downward trend. And then Rey starts out as, you know, this impoverished scavenger. She's a bit naive. You know, she's good with mechanical stuff and I guess a decent pilot, but she doesn't have any powers or anything like that. And as the movie goes on, she starts to realize her destiny and realizes that she can use the Force and learns to control it to some extent. And then right at that duel is where the arcs cross, and quite literally in the form of lightsaber blades, and Rey comes out on top and Kylo Ren continues to drop. And Rey overtakes Ren, basically.
He's my favorite Sith. Okay, I like him. So I understand why some people don't like him, because they want the Dark Lord, because that's the Star Wars-y thing. But I love that he's this young, angry man who can't actually control his powers, and he's such an overcompensating tryhard, and it makes him so interesting. And it does dip him down to where it feels like, okay, I can see Rey holding him off. Where if they'd introduced some, you know, Darth Vader level badass, then having Rey hold him off would have felt way too cheap.
And I think people would have been disappointed if we did have another Darth Vader, like a character exactly like Darth Vader. And I think maybe JJ knew that. And I feel like this character is sort of like, it resembles a lot of who JJ Abrams is as a director, because he's famous for trying to like emulate other people's styles, but he sometimes doesn't do it right. Like, you know, Star Trek sometimes. Right, exactly. Exactly. So sometimes I think that he has insecurities about that shit too. So this character is sort of like, it's an idea of this new generation who try and emulate things from the past that was considered amazing and awesome without knowing all of the faults of it and failing. And so I'm hoping that I don't ever want Kylo to be a good guy. I hope in the next movie he figures out what kind of fucking Sith he wants to be and figures out why he wants to be a Sith and becomes close to like this evil motherfucker towards the end of the next movie.
I don't want another redemption arc. I think we've done that already. I don't want to see like a repeat of the Vader's redemption. I want something different here, especially given what Kylo's crime is, that he killed Han Solo. I think the movie is saying this guy is not on a redemption vector. I mean, that would be a weird direction after killing such a beloved character. For such a touchy-feely J.J. Abrams movie, for it to turn around and expect the audience to be okay with him just becoming nice at a later point.
Yeah, and I think there's a great setup for him and Rey to be basically rivals in the next film.
Yeah. Because
they're both getting, like, trained. And Rey herself is not, like, a stoic, you know, good little Jedi kind of person.
No,
she's both a hothead. More so even than Luke.
Right, they are both. They've got all their emotions there right on the surface. And that should make that, again, that serves the tone of this new trilogy really well.
So I definitely can see a very believable rivalry erupting between the two of them. And if we can back up to like more general stuff, since we kind of jumped immediately into the Rey discussion, like I love the new cast. I think the best part of this movie is that the new cast is so fantastic.
Yes.
And they can all like
all
really carry their roles.
All of
literally
them.
Literally
everyone.
There's no one standing out as like, I don't really like this person. Or even like, I like this person a little bit less than the rest of them. They're all fantastic.
Yeah, they are.
And their characters are instantly more relatable than the prequel characters.
I don't like Greg Grunberg as the Neo Porkins. I don't like Greg Grunberg at all.
I don't even remember that character or who you're talking about.
Oh, that guy who... Oh yeah, Chris, I want to congratulate you. You know, it's not easy to get a role in Star Wars movie these days.
Oh, sickest of burns.
That scene...
Jesus Christ, Rutskarn. God.
That scene with all the cameos really did bother me. It's got Greg Grunberg, it's got Miles from Lost, it's got Carrie Fisher's daughter. There's like two or three other characters in there that are cameos. The whole planning the battle scene irritated the crap out of me because I kept looking for people that J.J. Abrams just stuck in because he owed them a favor.
Well, that kind of gets into the cons of this movie, which I think can be summed up in one question. Do we really need another Death Star? Really?
Yeah.
But this one's bigger, Josh.
Yeah.
Here's the little tiny Death Star, and here's the big Star Killer.
Easier than any of the other ones.
The more I think about the movie, the more stuff you realize that they just felt like they had to put in there. And it was like, wow, they had to do that, and they had to have one of these, and they had to have one of these, and wow, I don't think they needed to stick that closely to especially the Death Star, was just such repetition for repetition's sake. But I guess they were playing it really, really safe. If in the third one of these movies we have to do another Death Star, I'm out.
Oh God, no.
Yeah,
no. I think
agreed.
That's the end of the Death Stars. I think even they realize that at this point. And the thing that bothered me the most about the Death Star bit was what Kamster was talking about, that like in all the other movies, the Death Star was the primary motivator of the plot. It was always about like, okay, we have to find a way to destroy this Death Star. And this one, it was just like, oh, they happen to have a Death Star, I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Hey, how do we know how to kill Death Stars? Let's figure this out. Okay, we got a plan. Let's do it.
Well, the line was something like, there's always a way to blow them up. And I'm like, really? There's always a way? This worked twice.
Yeah. My complaint, since we're doing complaints, I think Snoke is dumb and boring and looks like a CGI piece of crap.
Oh, you're the first nerd that I've heard to say that. I agree, but I've been secretly agreeing because I've seen a lot of nerds who are like, Snoke is so cool. He's like projecting that he's a giant.
What?
But he actually looks... I swear to God. I'm glad that you all agree that he's so lame.
I do hope that he turns out to be a 3-foot-tall evil Yoda kind of character.
That would be
cool.
In fact, that's probably where they're going because the projection is so gigantic. Although, is he projecting naked? I mean, he doesn't even seem to have any impressive robes or anything, and he's not covering up his head.
That's how I record the fucking podcast. I'm not wearing any pants. I mean, maybe it's the same thing.
It's just conference call. He doesn't even look like that. This is the avatar he picked out.
He forgot that he had video mode on.
He's like, oh shit, I'm on video.
He's actually this adorable little like space cat creature, but he just left face rig on when he connected.
No, I Snoke didn't even really have to be in this movie.
Hinting that he existed is good. Showing him like, was probably too much.
Yeah.
Save your secrets, JJ.
Like, the Emperor was mentioned in A New Hope, but he didn't show up in any real fashion until Return of the Jedi. I mean, he had one scene in The Empire Strikes Back, and it wasn't even the same actor.
I'm wondering how we're going to look back on this film after the next two have come out. The next two real ones, not the legends or side stories or whatever. Because I get the sense that this film is going to be... Like, right now, I think we're all riding the high on, oh my god, Star Wars is back, it's alive again, and it doesn't feel wooden and awful and horrible, and I actually enjoyed myself, and oh my god. And I think once we actually get the story of, like, the new characters that we all seem to really like, their own story, not their story weirdly, you know, affixed to Han Solo's story for some reason, that is just a retread of A New Hope. I think once we have those stories, we're going to look back at this one and go like, it's a good bridge episode, but if I want to watch New Hope, I can watch New Hope. You know,
that's what I feel like.
This is a bridge.
I really want this to be, this is the handoff, and the next movies will just be confident in taking their own direction instead of just recycling more shit from, like, from Empire Strikes Back or something. If somebody gets frozen in any kind of carbonite type stuff, I will be pissed.
It'll be
Finn
BB-8.
Was frozen in carbonite. Oh no. I think it stands on its own.
Oh, it does. It does. I don't say that.
It draws too much from A New Hope. Yes, and that's always going to be a problem that it'll have when we look at its legacy. But I think even after the new films come out, I'll still think this is a good film.
Oh, no, we're not going to look back on this as, like, the prequels. I'm not saying we're going to look back on this and go, that movie sucked. I think we're going to look back on it and go, like, it was a good handoff, and it's, like, sort of the way we move from one generation to the next, but it's pretty clearly just a rehash of The New Hope with the new cast sort of there. And I don't know, I liked it. I really did like it, but I'm more looking forward to where this goes than this film itself. I'm hoping this is the beginning of a really cool Star Wars series of films. But I don't know if this one in particular is going to look as good as it looks now after we've seen where this goes. Unless the new movies suck, in which case, fine. But
I mean, I hope you're right, because if the new movies are good enough to blow this one out of the water, they're going to be really fucking good.
Well, I don't think the new movies... I think, you know, you have to be talking critically. You can't have a new movie do better than this one financially. Or if it does, it'll just be an extra $100 million. Like, who cares? It's a rounding error. Like, everybody that could go see this movie is going to go see this movie. So the only reason to do better from here on is out of a artistic drive, not a financial one. Because this one is already, like...
Yeah, I mean, The Empire Strikes Back was not as... I don't know, I think it was probably more commercially successful than the first one, just because Star Wars was a massive thing at the time, but, like, it wasn't ever considered as successful as the first one, but it's still considered better than the rest of the films, generally, by critics. Although I think that was not the case at the time. I think that was something
at the time, I believe, later. A New Hope was more beloved because it was the original, and there was a large fear of sequels, and...
And a lot of the stuff in Empire is good because because it does pay off in Return of the Jedi. Like, I remember having arguments with other kids. Like, they were like, no, Darth Vader isn't really Luke's father. He was just saying that. And I was arguing from authorial intent, even though I was too young to know those words, that no, that would be a stupid way to, like, work. That would be a stupid thing to put in a movie, was like, no, I'm just dicking with you, I'm not really your dad. That would make for a dumb sequel, and I realized that. And so I was trying to argue...
That's the kind of Sith I would be, Seamus. If I was a Sith, I'd be like, oh, I'm your mom.
Yeah.
Oh no, I can't believe it.
But I was like 11, so I couldn't argue that point properly, but I had that that argument with kids at the time. And knowing that all of that does pay off kind of makes Empire that much more potent. And I think that's a lot of what makes Empire good is that there aren't any dumb moments in it that don't pay off. Han Solo's being frozen in carbonite. No, he's not being written out of the story for good. This is a lead into the next movie where that'll turn into a really cool scene. And so if Jedi had kind of gone
Although Harrison Ford really wanted Han Solo to be dead. And I wonder if him coming back was contingent on Han Solo getting killed in this film. Because he's been trying to get Han Solo killed for 30 years.
Yes. I wonder if that wasn't one of his stipulations for coming back is you got to kill off my character.
I wonder how much of it was just prudence on the part of the producers, just because you can't afford to keep having Harrison Ford come back. Like,
that's a good point.
I don't know if you guys saw the numbers, but apparently Harrison Ford got something like $10 to $13 million in cash plus a percentage of the gross ticket sales.
Wow!
And so he's clearing something like $20 million. Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher are both like in, I think it was just like the low seven digits. So they got a couple million dollars, but they didn't get the Harrison Ford money to come back.
$1 million.
Granted, granted, Harrison Ford carried this movie in a way that they didn't.
Yeah,
it was good to get him to get Solo out of the story. We can't have the old cast just hanging around. Luke was off stage for this whole movie, and it was Han and Leia. And now Han is gone, and now they can bring Luke in. So we're never going to have all three of them in the same movie, just sucking up screen time and just sucking time away from the new cast, which is where the focus needs to be.
I mean, okay, so I haven't really weighed in yet, and I kind of wanted to hear what you guys had to say, but I think I maybe liked the movie less than some of you did.
Wow. Oh, man, you should have spoke up sooner. Okay, let's hear it.
Okay.
Okay, here's the thing. I actually really enjoyed watching the movie. I'll say that first. Like, I had a great time in the theater, came out feeling, like, really pumped and, you know. But, like, it's, you know, it's the sort of thing where, like, in the moment, you know, a lot of the scenes, the action beats, you know, really have you get the adrenaline pumping, they're well shot, you know, they're well planned out. It's just, I kind of wish they weren't all chained together with as few character moments as there are motivating the action scenes. You know, it feels like in the beginning they had a pretty good thing going where every, like, scene of action and drama was really motivated by a clear, coherent character decision. And then it felt like once they got to the planet with the lady, the awesome bar.
Yes. Movie Bob's.
What happened to her movie incidentally? Bob's She just disappears.
J.J. Abrams actually said they had her come with them on the Falcon in the original cut of the movie, and he realized she had nothing to do, so we just cut her out of the movie. Just because she was literally just standing in the background of all the scenes. So they just like, well, let's not have this character just standing there in the background, useless.
You know what? That's prudent.
Yeah. And Movie Bob, what Movie Bob said is sometimes you can hear the gears turning a little too loud. And I think that's a good way of summing up what you're saying, Rutzgarn. Like, sometimes you can just feel them just going, oh, well, now we need to have a scene where we all jump in fighters. And now you need to go and get a lightsaber and so just go downstairs and there's a lightsaber and have a scene with that. Like, suddenly it's less about characters and it's more they're being drawn magnetically to the needs of the plot.
Yeah, I think, like, the second half of the second act and the first half of the third act, to make it needlessly confusing, were the weakest part of the film when...
No, the Wrath
Guard. There's a Death Star, and there's a bunch of stuff running. Like, basically everything weak, from honestly.
The
Wrath Guards. The CGI monsters where the movie suddenly started feeling like Star Trek meets Aliens.
The Full Sail Squid. The Full Sail monsters.
I totally forgot about that entire scene. That is how stupid that scene is. I forgot it had happened. In my mind, it was like they team up with Solo, and then then something happens. And then, and then they go to the bar. Okay, that's the movie. Right. I totally forgot about the space squid.
See, I feel like the movie does the thing where, like, I really like the characters. Like, I really like all the new characters, and I actually, I'm mad that I feel like they're not doing enough with them. Like, I really like the idea of, like, Rey going on this journey and, like, sort of becoming, figuring out being a Jedi with, like, no Luke or Obi-Wan or anything there to guide her and, like, feeling that out. And I feel like the movie cheated her out of a lot of that arc. And just, like, sort of, because it was too impatient to get the next scene where, you know, she's actually off-screen, sneaking around, instead of showing us, like, her developing her powers and learning to use them against various groups of stormtroopers. And I feel like it was...
J.J. Abrams sort of thing.
Yeah, it was in too much of a hurry to get to the next big battle scene. Now, I'll say there's one exception to this, to give you an idea of what I'm talking about. I thought the scene with Finn and Rey lightsaber fighting Kylo Ren was perfect. Because it was great, because it's like, okay, so Finn has his moment where he needs to be brave and pick up the lightsaber, and he gets his ass kicked. But, you know, that still demonstrates his character. Like, they didn't make him into a badass for no reason. He's still just some guy who's grabbing a lightsaber and doing his best against Kylo Ren, who, again, for his character, also is not a great lightsaber fighter, because who's he been sparring with all this time?
Yeah, I love that the lightsaber... I love choreographed lightsaber fights, and I was disappointed I didn't get one, but from a character's perspective, I like that they were both... that all three lightsaber wielders were clumsy hacks.
Right. So and then Rey gets
to
step in.
The fights... You mean you liked the lightsaber fights in the prequels, is what you're saying?
That's the only thing I liked in the prequels.
What? Oh, even Obi versus Anakin?
Fights. Okay. That would have been great if it was, you know, just a couple of minutes long. Yeah, dragged on too long, but I like it's like watching a
I thought you were going to say if that was just a couple hours shorter.
That would have been fair. But no, I mean, it comes from my love of martial arts movies. I just love to see beautifully choreographed fights like that. And I'll just, there's no upper limit on how much of that I'll watch. So I enjoy that stuff, even if all the attendant qualities, even if the special effects are stupid and the characters suck, if two people really have their choreography down, I'll just sit there and watch it.
A quick aside, in episode 3, the very last lightsaber battle is Anakin versus Obi-Wan, and it's supposed to be this, oh my god, best friends are now fighting each other to the death kind of thing. But instead, it's a video game with flippy shit and platforming and weird lightsaber twirls over in lava world. And
it's really over-designed Smash Bros. Stage.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, no, and it kind of, to me, is something that is really integral to, like, wrestling, where it's like, in wrestling, you can have a match that's all flippy shit or all spectacle, but if there isn't in-ring psychology, if there isn't this guy fucking hates this guy and they're going to battle and you're going to feel like this is a brawl and they're going to kill each other, then the match itself completely falls apart. It just loses all of its emotion. It just turns into a complete fucking mess where you're like, this is fake, this is fake, that's fucking fake. And like, and I think that fight scene for me was sort of, I like choreographed shit and I love wire foo and shit, but like that to me completely destroyed my love for like crazy lightsaber battles. And I was glad that in this movie it was just two people wailing on each other because they're freaked out or angry or whatever, and it didn't feel like two Jedis or a Sith versus a Jedi. It felt like people just wailing on each other.
And that was my point, really. That was my point. Even though I love choreographed fights that are just beautiful, I'm glad we didn't get one here. I think that would have been out. I think that would have been too much. I like that we saw them fighting as a couple of clumsy hacks, and next time we can see them doing flippy shit.
Yes.
Which is not to say that the fight was poorly choreographed, but that it was choreographed in such a way to not look like experienced fighters. Like, I really liked how you could tell that there were certain things about the way that, like, particularly Rey fought that, like, fed into, like, what she would have had experience fighting with, which was her great big stick. So she did a lot of thrusting moves that were not necessarily what she should have been doing with a much smaller weapon.
I like how Kylo Ren was just trying to overpower her with his giant lightsaber.
Yeah.
You're chopping so hard and whiffing like a complete noob.
So to get back to you know, my... So that's why I like that fight, is because then it was really important that Rey finish that fight. That Rey be the one to pick up the lightsaber and beat him. And I think that they handled that well. And my only complaint is, again, they get to the end and then they rush it. There's that moment where they've locked sabers and he's like, I want to be your mentor. I can teach you. And actually, you know, if at that point she'd just like thrown him off and like beaten him away, that would have been great. Or if at that moment she'd had some kind of realization, like some sort of important character moment, and that had given her the strength to move on, that would have been great. But what happens is, like, she's like, you know, my mentor? And she, like, seems to, like, lose herself for a second, and then she's like, oh, right, I need to win the battle. And, like, that seems to be, like, there's a...
No, I saw that movie twice. I saw the movie twice, and that was my favorite moment in the movie. And I was like, but it only lasts a second. I saw it again. It lasts almost a minute. It's almost a minute of her deciding what the fuck to do. And there's no music at first. So it's her being like, oh shit, I want to be trained. I want to be trained. I want to know what this shit is. And then the music starts swelling very slowly. And then she closes her eyes. And then you get a couple more seconds of her deciding. And then the music starts to calm. And then she's going to go do it. It feels like it's just a second, but it's actually a pretty long moment of her figuring out what side she's picking. It's just in the moment.
Is that
it feels
what was supposed to be
short.
Happening then? Because I actually, I didn't get that.
It's her deciding, I'm rejecting the dark side, basically. Because he's like, I'm going to train you. And this guy's an evil fucking motherfucker.
And at this point, she's seen a lot of this guy's power.
Yeah. And she wants it because she's been parroting him since they met. Since they met, she's been trying to do everything that he does. So it makes sense that her character's like, oh shit, if he trains me, I can learn all these things that I've been trying to like mimic him at. But he just killed his dad. He's an evil motherfucker. He wants to blow up people. I'm
and
not
he may
gonna
have
do
just
it.
Killed Finn.
Fuck that shit. And okay, he might have just killed my only friend. Yeah, so I mean, like, if you look at it that way, that scene is her choosing the light side, basically, which I think is rad, and it's totally my favorite.
That is a good note to end on, because we have run way long, but I know we've been itching to talk about this for a long time.
Well, actually, in the expanded universe, and...
Also, I wanted to point out how Return of the Jedi's title is now sort of meaningless.
The Jedi return, they just all got murdered.
The brief return and then subsequent departure of the Jedi. The visit of the Jedi.
So.